Hello and welcome back to Aliens, UFOs, and Ghost Stories. My name is Jake, and today I am absolutely honored to have a conversation with Kathleen Martin. For our younger listeners who might not know, Kathleen is the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. Without question, the most important alien abduction of all time. And I'm going to put links in the show notes so you guys can fully understand who she is and who her family is. Kathleen is an incredibly accomplished author. She's wrote many books. I have a few of them. I don't have all of them. And Kathleen, would you like to say hi?
Hello, everybody. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yeah. So for those of you don't know, I just want to talk about her involvement with MUFON. If you do a little bit of research or go on her bio, she's been involved with MUFON for a very long time, and she's accomplished some incredible things within that community. And for our younger listeners, this is the Mutual UFO Network. Is that right?
That is correct. And let me tell you a little bit about the Mutual UFO Network. I wanted, way back when, this is way back in the mid-80s, when I was sort of being mentored by my aunt, Betty Hill, about UFOs. And of course, I was 13 years old when she had her own experience and was there all along the way. Within 2 days, I was at her house with my family. I was the second person to even hear about this, because when I arrived home from school, she was on the phone with my mother. So all these years later, I wanted to do my own investigation to separate fact from fiction so that I could write a book about my aunt and uncle's experience. And I didn't care what I found. If I thought that it hadn't really happened, as a lot of other people were saying in that time frame, I would give my opinion that it hadn't. But boy, I discovered that it was real, very real. But I joined the Mutual UFO Network in 1991 because they would offer training on how to do an investigation. And I studied and I became a field investigator. And from there, I was a state section director in the state of New Hampshire. I lived up there at that time. And also, I became the national director of field investigator training, went on and became the director of the experiencer research team. I wrote the protocols on how to do an alien abduction. After having been in the organization for many years, they didn't have those protocols. So along the way, I did a lot of volunteer work for the Mutual UFO Network. But the training that I acquired through that organization helped me during the investigative process. It told me what to look for, how to do an unbiased investigation. And so from the starting point, I think that I've probably done the most thorough investigation than anyone can do. Now, you can become a MUFON member by going to MUFON.com, MUFON.com. And you don't have to become an investigator unless you have the time to volunteer and that's something you want to do. You can just become a member and get inside information on UFO sightings and ET contact. And there is MUFON TV where you can learn a lot more. So it can be as little or as much as you want. And MUFON's International Symposium is going to be held this weekend in Covington, Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, no. I'm aware of that, and I was really hoping to acquire the funds to try to go there, and maybe I still can. You know, it's this weekend, so we'll see what I can do. My family's actually from Kentucky; they're from a city called Pineville.
Oh.
And that's in the Appalachian Mountains.
Uh-huh.
And that's where, and we'll get into that later, but that's why, and that's where my family lived when a lot of our contact with Progenitor started. But I would like to go over the books, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
So I have two of your books, and if I had more funds, I'd have all of them. You know, you don't make a whole lot of money doing these podcasts.
No, you don't make a whole lot of money writing these books either.
Well, that's hard for me to understand and interpret, because to me, you're one of the most powerful voices within this community.
I do it because I love it. That's why I do it. And because I have a thirst for knowledge, and I used to be a teacher. I was an education services coordinator, and first I was went into psychiatric social work. But when I learn something, I just share it. And I love to write as well, so that's what I do.
Yeah, and you're a very prolific writer. So the first book that I bought was called The Alien Abduction Files. And this was a book that you wrote with Miss Denise Stoner.
That's correct. Denise has a long history in the Mutual UFO Network as well. Presently, she is Florida MUFON State Director, and she is also the Assistant Director of MUFON's National ERT Team. So, she's pretty powerful in MUFON at this point. I have to say that Denise is the best investigator that I have ever worked with. Very impressed by her work. And I met her way back in 2009 when my husband and I had moved to Florida from New Hampshire. And I wanted to become involved in Florida MUFON. So I found a meeting, and lo and behold, she was the host of the meeting. And she recognized me, and I'm not sure if it was several days or a month, what it was, but she invited me to have lunch with her, and I got to talk with her, and she told me about her UFO abduction. And it was a big case, but it hadn't really been investigated. She'd had hypnosis with a hypnotist when she lived in Colorado, and it took place in Colorado. In the center of the state, on a road through the South Park Valley. And Ed, Denise's husband, their daughter, their dog, and Denise, every weekend during the summer would take a trip down from, they lived in a suburb of Denver, to a place where Denise and her family would gather together and go camping for the weekend. So it was Buena Vista. And on this particular night, even though they had a regular schedule, they left at the same time, they followed the same procedures. Denise's mother always had dinner for them when they arrived. But this time, Kraft shot toward their car, and Denise had conscious recall of feeling that car lift off the highway. She tried to say something to Ed, but his hands were clinging on to the steering wheel, and he was staring straight ahead like he was in a trance. And the next thing they knew, they were on the other side of South Park Valley. They were on another pass, and it was dark. It had been daylight. It was only, it's been a long time, but I think it was about 7 o'clock at night. Now here they are, it's cold, it's pitch black. They don't know how they arrived, where they were. Denise was freaking out. Ed was just confused. They had turned on the headlights. They don't know how that occurred. And they drove on. And Denise's family was extraordinarily distressed. They were looking for Ed and Denise. They were ready to borrow a telephone. They didn't have cell phones in those days, to call the highway patrol to see if there'd been an accident. It really turned into quite an extraordinary case, and it reminded me a lot of my aunt and uncle's case, because there they were driving to go on a vacation, and they were abducted. So I wrote about that. I investigated it. I did the hypnosis sessions separately with Denise and with Ed. It was not a one-time event. Denise, we discovered, had been taken from the time she was a child. This had happened repeatedly. I didn't even put it into the book, but apparently Denise's parents had been taken before her, and perhaps even her grandmother.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, you know, I'm sure you've done this a lot longer than I have, obviously. And, you know, you're a true researcher. You know, I research anywhere from 4 to 9 hours a day, sometimes 10, sometimes it's only 1 hour a day. But I'm a very extensive researcher, although because I'm so young and I haven't put in my time, I don't consider myself one. And I'm certainly not a ufologist or a journalist, obviously. But I feel a very strong sense that I'm supposed to be bringing our guests on, like yourself, Kathleen, to spread the word, you know, to try to help people. And I think that I'm headed in the right direction. I would like to go over a couple more books of yours that have really captured my attention.
Yes. And before you begin, I would just like to say I would encourage anyone who is interested in this type of work to join MUFON and to begin your own investigating and research. Go to archives, read the history of government involvement in UFOs, because I've written a book on it too. You could just, all of my books are footnoted, but if you ever want to rise to the top of this field, you have to do the work, and a lot of work. You have to know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you absolutely do. And you know, I'm sure you know that. So just some like insider baseball type stuff on this one. Like, the vast majority of the people who contact me are people who don't want to go public, and I don't want them to either. I don't want them to go public.
I agree.
If they don't want to. So like, you have to let people hike their own hike, you know. Sometimes it's people from the military, CIA, DOD, FBI, who, you know, they're military whistleblowers, but they can't go public. And I understand that. And sometimes they're friends. Like, there's a very close friend of mine who I seem to be talking about every single podcast from a state that I can't name. He's around my age, and his experiences are probably the most unique I've ever heard in my life. And he's up there with Chris Bledsoe, Ronnie Dawson. Are you familiar with Ronnie?
I've heard the name, but I can't think of his case right now.
Yeah, we'll talk about that some other time, but I'm going to really try to keep this around the hour mark. And if you guys are interested in Kathleen's books, that every bit of that information is going to be in the show notes. And I strongly encourage you guys to go check them out, because they are fantastic. But if we could move on to, so I'm really, really, really interested in your involvement with the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation. Could you tell our young listeners what that is and what you guys discovered?
It is now a defunct organization, but back in 2013, I was speaking at a UFO conference in South Central Florida, and a man approached my table. His name was Ray Hernandez, And he had had an extraordinary experience that was sort of part UFO and part spiritual. His wife was a devout Catholic. Their elderly dog was going to have to be put down because she was paralyzed. And what happened is his wife was up all during the night praying that God would heal the dog. And this thing, something appeared in the living room. She was calling, "Ray, come down, Ray, come down." She dragged him down there. And then she and the dog disappeared. And he saw sort of like an entity of sorts. And then the next thing he knew, he was missing time, I believe. This is so long ago as well. So many things go through this mind. And then the wife and the dog came back, and the dog was jumping around and running like a puppy. And Ray had been a materialist. He was a nuts and bolts, non-believer. And this transformed him incredibly, so incredibly, that he ended up forming the Edgar Mitchell, and Edgar Mitchell gave him permission to form that organization, Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial and Extraordinary Encounters. And Ray asked me to become part of the organization. In fact, I think he listed me as the chairman of the board of directors, something similar. And we worked on a major, major study on experiencers. And I had already done a study with Denise Stoner. We had 75 participants, but in this study, it was an academically oriented study with PhD academics and lay researchers such as myself. Denise was involved in it too. And I believe that we had something like 4,300 participants when all of the information was evaluated. It was a gigantic study. And with some very interesting results. And I worked on phase one of that study because I was so busy with being the director of the ERT and working with experiencers and team members on a daily basis that I just couldn't spread myself any thinner without worrying about getting divorced. And so I was working on another study. In 2015, I did a follow-up of my first study with a larger number of participants. This time we had 516. And I had Dr. Don C. Donderi, who is an academic psychologist, retired from McGill University. He had worked on social research for many, many years, had worked with Bud Hopkins, that you might be familiar, the famous pioneer researcher on alien abduction as well. And they had worked on a number of academic studies together too. So from 2015 to 2018, I worked with members of my team. One was a psychologist, Dr. Michael Austin Melton. Another was a researcher and hypnotherapist. And I had a master's degree in computer something. And Craig Lang, he's now deceased, and other members of the ERT. And so Ray Hernandez said to me, please ask the same questions that we've asked at Free, because when you do social research, you need to do it time and time again. It's not the kind of thing where you do just one study. You need to determine if your other studies and the input you get supports the information that you received on the other studies. So I said, fine, you know, it's not going to be as extensive as Free's study. We had two phases, whereas Free had something like four or five phases, I think. And and we had about 118 questions or something like that. So that was another very important study, and our results were pretty much in line with Free's. So was happy with that. One of the questions that we asked on both studies was, if you could end your experiences today, would you? Now, so many people think that this is just horrific and everybody wants it to end. But in MUFON's study, we found that 71% of all of the survey takers and 74% of those who Dr. Don Derry was able to identify through the American Personality Inventory as having UFO abduction syndrome, meaning they had all the characteristics of having been abducted aboard a UFO. They had an even higher rate saying, no, I don't want it to end. Keep it going. 74%. So that, and Freeze was, I think it was 83% who did not want their experiences to end. So then you say, if this is so horrible, this is so bad, why do these people want it to continue? So I started interviewing people, started asking, how come? And for the most part, people were saying, I want the answers. I'm curious. I want more information. And so that was sort of, I guess, the largest reason. It wasn't that it's, you know, it's all love and that sort of thing, positivity. No, we had positive and we had negative at the polar ends. But in between, most people were just part of a program that was like a scientific program that involved scientists and educators, and were here primarily, well, in my opinion, and according to the information that I have from all of these studies and from talking with a couple of thousand experiencers on top of that, is that they think of us as sort of an endangered species. And they're very concerned that we could destroy our planet. And so they're attempting to raise human consciousness, to make everyone aware that of their concerns and that they would like to help us, but they're working quietly from a distance. And so they want us to do our part as well.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And from how it's been explained to me, from my, you know, star brothers and sisters, it's very important to be able to receive love, express mm-hmm. love, and unconditional love is the most valuable thing that you can receive, period. And
yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And throughout my meditation, which I'm not very good at, to be honest, I'm trying my best. I'm getting help from a named Rafael Lugo. He's a Hispanic rapper who makes music about love and light, like peace, love and light. And you've actually met him in Colorado with Miss Denise Stoner, and Denise helped him a lot, and so did you. And if you guys are interested in learning more about raising your vibrations and, you know, properly expressing love and becoming a light being yourself, I suggest that you go to schizomusic.com. He's a wonderful man, and he emanates love and light, just like yourself. And but anyway, I did want to talk a little bit, maybe like 3 to 5 minutes, on the form that I recently filled out. And when you fill these forms out, because I did it for Mary Rodwell as well. She's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Briggs is a friend of mine too.
Oh, is that so? Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's a sweet guy. And
he is.
Are you familiar with a woman named Dolly Safran?
Yes.
So I hate to put you on the spot, and this probably should have been asked off air. Are you friendly with her? Or?
No.
Oh.
No. Okay. I'm not. I have not met her in person. I have read Preston Dennett's book about her. He sent me his book. And he offered to introduce me to her. But I have to tell you that I'm so busy working all the time and trying to slow down, too, because I'm now 75 years old. And so trying to slow down a bit. And I would love to meet her when I can find time. That's the greatest enemy that I have, is lack of time.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm actually going to be meeting them in person, Preston and Dolly. And I think I can say this because it's so vague. I'm going to be driving to Georgia, where they both reside. And and we're going to sit down and have a conversation and cook for each other. It's going to be really nice.
Oh, that's great. Terrific. Yeah, I had forgotten that he moved to Georgia.
Mm-hmm. He sure did. The last time I talked to them, it was off air, of course. And I brought them on maybe like 2 or 3 weeks back. In that time, I've had Debs Schottky.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've had her on. I've had a young man who is extremely powerful, and he's going to be one of the best researchers within this field very, very soon. He's only 35. Oh, he's his name is Marquise Williams, and he's making tidal waves right now.
Great.
Yeah, and you know, so on and so forth. But like Deb Cobble's been on.
Yeah, she's great.
I love Deb. She's really funny.
She is.
She's very funny.
She's such a great person.
Yeah, but you know, Deb Schottky. Of course. And then, yeah, so like this form that I filled out, you know, when you fill these forms out, and I'm not sure if it was the exact same, Kathleen, but I'm pretty sure it was pretty similar, if not the exact same. I know that the Dr. Edgar Mitchell currently is defunct, but you sent me a form to fill out, and I strongly suggest young listeners that you go and acquire this. I'll put this in the show notes as well. If you feel that you may have, you know, seen a craft that was less than 100 yards away from you, if you have dream not dreams, if you suspect that, because I've had a ton of those, and I don't want to get into my stuff too early, but we're almost at the 30 minute mark, which is halfway. Is it okay if I run some of my experience by you to get your opinion on them?
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. So the most recent, this is kind of hard to talk about, but the most recent time that they came in, and when I say came in, I don't mean like they came in my front door. It was last year about this time. Mm-hmm. And just to paint the picture, my wife and I don't mean to be, I'm trying to be descriptive and not gross, but I'm a heavy guy. I sleep in the nude, and my wife sleeps in like a t-shirt and underwear. And I just have to have it that way. And I have to also have a fan on, the air conditioning on, and no lights whatsoever. So I'll unplug her, you know, whatever those hair things are called, where that curls her hair curler. And I have to unplug her cause it has a blinking blue light, and I just can't do it. But I woke up, my left arm was around my wife's waist. And I woke up in pure, I was just terrified. I don't know why, but I was. There was light emanating in the room that I assumed was coming from the hallway or the stairwell. which wouldn't make sense because, again, I cannot sleep with any lights on. And my left arm was already around her waist because that's just how we sleep. And I extremely aggressively and panicky yanked her off the bed, and I was just trying to get away from them. And my head should have hit the wooden floor, and my shoulders should have hit the wooden floor, and my wife's back of her head should have potentially hit my mouth or my face, and her shoulder should have hit my chest. None of that happened at all, because I think they caught it in time before I physically injured myself or my wife. And I believe that was the last time I was taking that I have conscious recall of. I'm in the belief, and I'm curious to see what you think about this, Kathleen, that, you know, your aunt and uncle were taken physically on craft, their physical bodies. Yes. I'm under the belief that they're not really doing that anymore. It almost seems like they're taking your consciousness instead of your physical body. What do you think about that?
I think that the process of taking the physical body through the different dimension and onto craft has caused a great deal of illness in human beings, that it's really hard on us. And I think that the ETs realize that and will only take the physical body to craft if it is absolutely necessary. In fact, today, a lot of times if they have to do a physical procedure, they'll do it in your own bedroom instead of taking you to craft. But yes, they're quite capable of removing the consciousness. Some people call it the etheric self. Some people call it an out-of-body experience. But that part of you to the craft in order to interact with you and for whatever purpose they need to do that. So it's a lot easier on the human body. You talked about that fight or flight response. That is the most difficult thing. I've talked to so many people who have had that light in the hallway, that panic. That I've had people even who have set up cameras and recorded partial activity. And so it's so difficult and hard to overcome. I had the same thing for many years. I was living in agony, terrified of the night, until I convinced myself that I was going to be a victim, or I was going to overcome victimization and become a survivor. And it was extraordinarily difficult. But I worked on it for a very long time through self-hypnosis, through elevating my vibrational frequency. And eventually, it all changed, and I developed a better relationship. I think a more, you might say, egalitarian kind of relationship. And then eventually it simply stopped. I haven't been taken in at least 10 years now. So I wrote the book, I don't know if you're aware of it, Extraterrestrial Contact: What to Do When You've Been Abducted. There's a great deal of information in there for people who are attempting to process this and to work through it.
Yeah, that's actually the first one that I bought, because I wanted answers. Mm-hmm. And that meant a lot to me. And that's why it's not in my possession right now, along with Abduction by John Mack. My mm-hmm. my sister, I can't say which one, has been on craft with me mm-hmm. Together. And they started taking us when we were, I mean, I was 6, 7. She was probably nine, mm-hmm. 8 or 9. And That was another one that I had to file under dream, not dream. I got a lot of dream, not dreams. That was one of them. And like really quick, I did want to get your opinion on this because I don't want this to be too much about me. And I don't know, we'll figure this out later, but this is a photo that my nephew drew. I'm trying to make it, I don't know, it's not working. But he drew this, and he described it's, I'm going to have to edit that out. So we're at 35:29, and this is just a note for me. You have to take this out and do not mention that it's family. So I'll start up again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't want to do that because it could be dangerous.
Yeah, I know. So there's somebody that I know who reached out to me, and he pulled me aside recently. And this is somebody that I know, but not very intimately.
Mm-hmm.
And what he told me was that he woke up with a very tall, he said 8 to 11 feet tall, being in his room, and the being had eyes like this. They're almond shape, and they were pitch black. And he said the skin was very strange, that he looked like he was incredibly unhealthy and thin. And I asked him what color his skin was, and he said white. I was like, oh, so like us? He's like, no, like chalk white. So obviously I knew what that meant. And then I was like, well, what other type of beings have you seen? Like, have you ever seen any other, because he doesn't know how to perceive them. He's too young, this man that I'm speaking of. He said, I've seen clowns, but never any beings. I said, well, how tall were the clowns? He said, about my height. I'm like, well, how old were you? He said, well, at the time I was only 11. And like, so when you're 11, like, how tall do you think you might have been? He's like, I don't know, but I know how tall he was because he's a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, when you're 11, you're probably like 3.5, 4, 4.5 feet tall, whatever it may be. And he said, yeah, they were my height and they were clowns. I said, how many of them were there? He said three.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, it sounds so typical. And a lot of children see clowns. It's a screen memory put into the human mind, so they won't be fearful, because if they see a gray entity who's going to take them to craft, they might freak out. But, oh, a jolly little clown from the circus, well, that's a different story. Yeah. So they will put these images into your mind so that you believe that you're seeing something different than what is there. And, you know, I think that it might be benevolent of them to do that, to attempt to sort of mediate the level of fear that we experience. And as far as children are concerned, in our study, our MUFON study, about 75% were less than 20 years old when they had their first experience. And it was something like 36% were less than 5 years old. So most people who are taken are children when they're taken. Some think that they were taken, you know, they were just born into this. Maybe their mother was pregnant when they were taken for the first time. And we have discovered that among those who had UFO abduction syndrome, it ran in the family. This was intergenerational.
Yeah, that's what I'm being told by my spirit guides, my ET family, and Dolly Safran. But maybe that's a story for another time. But yeah, I do want to show you one more picture to get your opinion on it. This is from my friend.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how well you can see that. It's not a very good picture, but this is what my friend drew. And I said, well, with these clowns, what do they want to do with you? And he said, they're studying me. He said it so fast. I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know, like observing me. I'm like, well, why? He's like, I don't know. When they come in, they put their face right next to my face. And I was like, yeah. I was like, do they ever touch foreheads with you, or do they inhale really deeply? He said, no. I was like, well, you just said that they put their foreheads really close to yours, right? And he's like, yeah. But I just kept asking him questions, as many as I could, without making him uncomfortable. And I said, well, what happens when they come around? He said, well, they try to take me. I'm like, where do they try to take you? He said, onto a blimp. Do you know what I mean? Screen image. Yeah,
so a large craft.
Mm-hmm. A large craft. And I was like, what happens in the blimp? He said, well, at first I'm not in the blimp. I was like, well, that doesn't make sense. What do you mean? Like, elaborate on that. He said, well, at first I'm in a cargo container, like a cargo mm-hmm. ship container on the blimp. Mm-hmm. And then they let me in the blimp. And I said, mm-hmm. well, what happens in the blimp? He said, well, they put needles in me. And I was like, well, why do you think they do that? He's like, I don't know. And I was like, well, are you standing up when they do it? He said, I'm laying down. I'm like, are you laying down in a bed, like a comfortable cotton bed? He said, I'm laying on a hard table. I was like, what is the hard table made of? He said, I don't know, steel. It's cold. You know, I mean, it's pretty mm-hmm. straightforward if you're familiar with this type of stuff. And I was like, does the blimp have lights? And he said, no. And then he said, wait a minute. There was a light, but it was on the ground. I was like, was it, what shape was the light? He said, circular. I was like, okay. So, you know, if you look at this picture again, you can see that that's how I perceived it. I assumed he meant it was narrow at the top and became wider. And he said, no, that's not how it was. I was like, well, how was it? He's like, I don't know. But I was at the bottom of the circle on the grass, and I was fighting the clowns. I was like, well, what do you mean you're fighting the clowns? He said, I didn't want to go on the blimp. I was like, was anybody else with you? And he said, my sister was with me, his older sister, who's, mm-hmm. I can't say the age or who they are, but his older sister is 2 years older than him, and they're both under 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, why didn't you want to go? He's like, I was scared. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm scared too, buddy, all the time. Every time they take me, I'm paralyzed in fear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's so much more to this, but we do only have 18 minutes left. So, do you mind spending 5 minutes on, because I think a lot of people know Betty and Barney Hill's story, mm-hmm. which again are your aunt and uncle. And I find it so fascinating that you're the second person that they told. I mean, that's incredible. The first people I told, obviously within my family, is my sister, who I cannot name. She's older than me. And, you know, there's so much about that. She remembers being on craft, and the craft was called Talada. It's controlled by consciousness. But she has memories of interacting with a mantis being.
Mm-hmm.
And the mantis being, I believe, is named O. He has a much longer name, very difficult to pronunciate if you're a Homo sapiens sapien. But that's my interpretation of it. And my sister, I got to be careful here. My sister has had a dream of being, are you familiar with a baby presentation?
Yes.
I've mm-hmm. had a baby presentation, and mm-hmm. that's in my dream, not dream journal. Mm-hmm. And my sister taught, oh, that's another edit, 44 minutes. And my sister, who I cannot name, had a baby presentation. And with mine, I can't remember what it looked like. I don't know why. I think because they think it would scare me. And the being, who is tall, I know that. I don't remember what its face looked like at all. And I think they purposely did that. And basically what they said, or what I remember, is it's important for you to bond with this child. And if you don't, then it's going to continue to be sick.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bonding is so important. You know, after World War II, they did studies on children who were orphans and who were neglected and they had a failure to thrive. And these kids, when you are not able to bond with other humans, you never quite learn to become human. There's so much, so many nuances that are so important in learning to be human. And we don't even think about that. You know, we're raised in a family. We're always with our mothers. Think of what it's like to be raised by surrogates who are incredibly different than humans, because these non-humans are. They're not like us. They are different than us. Their consciousness, just the way they communicate, is so intense, powerful, that it's almost overwhelming to be in their presence. And then you feel, in a sense, so inferior to them, that they hold so much power over you. And I'm not a person that likes to be in a position of subjugation. So that was part of the reason where I thought, I am going to gain power. I'm going to, you know, experiment and experiment until I can be on more equal footing with them.
No, I know exactly what you mean. It's overwhelming. My first telepathic thought voice, I mean, that's how I choose to call it. I don't know what else to call it. I was in a deep meditation. And, you know, I basically said I was having a hard time, you know, because I was experiencing this stuff and I didn't know how to interpret it. So I was at my wit's end, and I was like, telepathically, of course. And my interpretation was, I was speaking to my spirit guides. My spirit guides, there's two of them. One is my father's father. My father is Cherokee Indian. Not entirely, of course. He's also Scottish, but I believe he's 1/8 or one. I always mix this up. He's either 1/4 or 1/8, and I'm either 1/8 or 1/16. And I sincerely don't remember, but I can all but guarantee that's why they're interested in us. I'm not sure why.
Most likely.
But not only that, like, I was told that when I'm on craft, that one of the first things they do for me and my sister that I can't name is they give us some sort of liquid drink. And whatever this drink is, it's supposed to help lower the radiation that we have within our bodies. And when I was first told this, I just assumed, you know, Deb Cobble explained to me that when she had her interaction with this small craft, an egg-shaped craft on her property, that she burned her eyes really bad. Mm-hmm. And she has radiation issues to this day. And Deb, I love you to death, but you did give me the okay to air this. So, you know, she's had extreme difficulties with her radiation levels. Because of this, she said and approved of me saying that her teeth are falling out. Her nails have trouble growing. Mm-hmm. Her hair is falling out. A lot of trouble with radiation. So that's how I interpreted that. But then I thought, well, my grandpa, my father's father, who again is one of my spirit guides, he sat on my bed twice in less than a week before my 21st birthday. He also sat on my grandma's bed tens of times, if not hundreds of times. He sat on my uncle, which is, again, unnamed. He sat on his bed about a half a dozen times, and he sat on my older cousin's bed, who was living at my deceased grandfather's house with my grandma, with his two kids, once. And that's four family members. I can all but guarantee that that's who that was. I know for a fact it was. Mm-hmm. And my other spirit guide is... I mean, in this carnation, he's a man. I don't know that he's always been a man, but we lived in Jerusalem before the time of the pharaohs. And when I asked him telepathically, who am I? What is my purpose? All these questions, like, what am I supposed to be doing? Do I have a mission? When I got around to who am I, the first telepathic thought voice I ever got in my life was Adomi. And you know me, I mean, like, I'm always paralyzed in fear when I interact with my ET family. My wife taught me this because she's seen shadow beings. I can't talk about all of her experiences, but anytime she gets scared and wants it to stop, she goes, "This is a prayer that you can say." And that's what I did. So when it responded to me, I go, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done." Mm-hmm. And it stopped. And it never, mm-hmm. I stopped meditating for 11 months. I stopped looking for answers. I stopped my podcast entirely. I was terrified. And then, you know, I've dated Hispanic women throughout my life. And I'm married right now to a Scandinavian woman, which is interesting. If you're familiar with the Nordics.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when I asked Dolly, I was like, "Hey, you're saying a lot of stuff. You're saying I was on craft with you and that it's piloted through your consciousness. If all this is true, then can you tell me what bloodline my wife comes from?" She goes, "Scandinavian," immediately. And my wife's grandpa was born in Sweden. That's Scandinavian. Mm-hmm. Like, how in the world would you know that? That's impossible. So anyway, so he told me Adomi. I say he. I don't know. I mean, in this carnation, in this form, this ball of light, this consciousness that he is, he is, you know, a basketball size orb of consciousness that looks like a blue purple color. And I mean, that's how I perceive him. Does that sound reasonable or no?
All sorts of things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Briggs told me that when he astral projects, he asked, yes. He asked his ET family, like, "When you see me out here, what do I look like?" And he said, "Well, you're a little ball of light." And he goes, he said, "Well, what do you guys look like?" He's like, "We're the same."
Right.
We're consciousness.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, I dated a lot of Hispanic women. When I say a lot, I mean like two Mexicans and a Puerto Rican woman. And I just assumed Adomi, like, how would you imagine that that's spelled? I imagined it as A-D-O-M-I. So that's what I researched for about 5 weeks with no results whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And then I said, well, I'm losing my mind. I'm mentally ill. I don't know what's happening, but that was obviously not real. And you're making stuff up. Like, I don't know. And then I was like, wait a minute, what if it's A-D-O-M-E? And I typed it into Google and said, Adomi, a singular form of the Edomites. The Edomites were a group of people who were kicked out of Egypt, or well, out of Jerusalem more specifically, for worshiping a false god.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that God.
So there's some confirmation for you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about what you said previously about people on craft and having needles inserted and that sort of thing. You know, you have the right to telepathically ask them why they're doing what they're doing. And if you don't want them to do that, tell them you want it to stop. Please stop doing this to me. I'm a sovereign being. What right do you have?
No, I know. And I did. In fact, this took place 3 weeks ago. It took mm-hmm. place two nights before I brought on Preston and Dolly. And what happened was, and I can't keep telling the story, so I'll do this in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I telepathically asked my, what I perceived as my star brothers and sisters, spirit guides, whatever you want to call it. I had this intense feeling that I was supposed to contact my friend from North Carolina. She's a female. She's married. I'm a man, obviously, and I'm married to my wife, and we're very happy. And there's no romance between us whatsoever. But I didn't speak to her in well over a year. She is a hybrid herself, and she has been presented with hybrid children multiple times, and she's been regressed. And she's been regressed by you.
Oh,
yeah. We'll talk off air because I don't want to say her name, but she's from North Carolina. Yeah, she was regressed by you, Kathleen.
Okay.
We'll talk mm-hmm. off air. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think she wouldn't mind because this is kind of an alias. Do you know the name Indy?
I'm not going to say because everything I do is confidential.
That's a great response, and I'm actually going to cut that 55 minutes and 1 second. So my friend, I had a strong sense that I was supposed to call her. Overwhelming sense. In a dream state, when I ignored it, they would not let me ignore it. They kept nagging at me, call my friend from North Carolina and call my friend from Colorado, which is Rafael Lugo, Skits the PLK. He raps about peace, love, and light. And I ended up contacting them both. And I was fishing because I'm an avid fisherman. My wife is incredible. She allows me to fish almost nearly every day, but I have a time limit. And my time limit here in Michigan is 9:30. She's like, hey, do whatever you want, but you have to come home at dark time, you know. So I telepathically, while I'm fishing, you know, I'm talking to my star brothers, star sisters, spirit guides. I said, hey, if you guys really want me to be in contact with her, you're going to have to give me a sign. And I do not want to see a UFO. I do not want to be abducted. And I don't want to see a progenitor or a tall white. I want you to either show me an owl or let me hear an owl. And that can be my confirmation. And I talked to her for an hour and a half because two experiencers or contactees do not talk for 15 minutes. It's practically an impossibility, you know?
Yes.
So I talked to her for an hour and a half. I feel very protective over her. I don't know why, because I don't with women, except for my immediate family or my wife. But I have this strong sense that we were like a soul family before we incarnated as Homo sapiens. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a false speculation. I'm not sure. But I'm holding, I don't know if I should talk about the MyLab stuff. I'll tell you off air about the MyLab. Are you familiar with MyLab?
Yeah, I'm familiar with everything. I've done this for so long, it's impossible not to know. And, you know, could I say something about the orbs? Mm-hmm. You were talking about orbs. Orbs are very, very common. The majority of experiencers have had conscious orbs in mm-hmm. their homes. I have a video from one of my most interesting cases where a conscious orb came into the environment and entered the experiencer's body and cured him of cancer. And there's medical evidence of that in this case, too. And I think that oftentimes, and this is just speculation on my part, but the orb is just holds the consciousness. And sometimes it's sort of like in the membrane between the dimensions. And sometimes that orb will simply pop into an entity, a non-human entity. It will be standing there in front of you.
Yeah, and there's a part of the whole orb. So, you know, Adomi. So here's another thing, and we only have 5 minutes left. But
okay.
It's so important for me to get somebody as well-researched and important within this field to get your opinion on this. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen a UFO, not once. And I don't have any memory of being on Talata, the consciously controlled craft. I don't at all. And I mm-hmm. think there's a reason I don't, is because I'm paralyzed in fear. There's a reason I haven't learned to speak the universal language. I've never, you know, I know some of it now. I know how to say I'm ready, and I know how to say like you and me, but that's it. But the reason I wasn't taught that knowledge, and I've never controlled craft, you know, I can't move things with my mind. I am incredibly, no, I'll rephrase that. I'm a little psychic, clairaudible, clairaudience. I don't know how to say what that clair is, but like, I know when people are going to get hurt. I know when people have bad intentions. I'm empathic.
Empathic. Yeah. Very common among experiencers. That's one thing that we have in common at a very high statistical rate.
So I'm looking at you, Kathleen, and I can see your physical body. And, you know, you look great. Congratulations. Happy birthday. That was only a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And, but I also see your true self, and your true self is how I perceive it is you're a small ball of energy consciousness, and you're radiating very brightly, and you're a very powerful, loving being, and you help people. That's just how I perceive you.
That's what I've done throughout my life. And that's what, you know, most people who can see my aura say about me.
Yeah. And I grew up in Detroit. So like for me to say that, it's almost like that's why I was so silent for so long. I grew up around a lot of hard men, which is kind of a gross term. Being hard just means you're not thoughtful and you're, you know, a bunch of other low
vibrations. Very defended.
Yeah. Well. But so let's do another 120 seconds. Really important. It's really important for me, for our young listenership, because it's incredibly young, incredibly young. And I have this incredible sense that those are the ones I'm supposed to be helping. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that. And I don't like to put fear out there. Things are going to change pretty soon here. And I want to help get them ready. And if you could just spend 2 minutes on your personal experiences, everybody knows your aunts and uncles' experience. It's the most famous case of all time. Not even close. But could you tell us briefly what you've experienced yourself?
I can very briefly. My first conscious experience was when I was 17 years old. And my aunt was working with a team of scientists to call in a craft to land on my grandparents' farm. And one did come in. It was observed by two separate individuals. And my mother and I had memories of being on that craft. I remember being on a table. I was terrified. And it haunted me for many, many years. I had contact periodically after that, always with about 5 foot tall grays. From my memory, there was always one who was very familiar to me, and he was my escort. I always saw him every time I went onto craft, and I felt comfortable with him. In fact, I would be terrified when they came for me, but when I arrived on that craft, I felt comfortable and in a familiar environment, like I felt I was not going to be harmed, even though sometimes the procedure was a little bit painful. And so I was taken very frequently, I would say once every or several times a year during my mid to late 20s. And then it started to slow down after that. And they did give me information that they did stick needles into me and took tissue samples because they were checking the levels of toxicity in my body. I was raised, I didn't know it at